Accession number 27185, reel 49.
Major Barras, reel 49. You were mentioning a rather extensive range of duties concerning with operations and training.
Yeah, go on. Sorry.
And intelligence, ceremonial affairs, management of sport and so forth. But which of these was most important, do you think?
I suppose the internal security. I had to keep in touch with all the colonies throughout the Caribbean on their internal security schemes. There were two sort of major threats, really. One was British Honduras, which the Guatemalans had their eye on for a long time because they didn't have any seaport. And in fact, if you went to school in Guatemala, you would find that they'd already got it. Didn't
on the map.
British Honduras didn't exist. So that was one threat, which I can enlarge on later. The other one was down in British Guiana, where we had a first minister, local first minister, I think he was called, or was he prime minister? It could have been. I don't think people understand the colonies. They think that it's all sort of done right through from the top and nobody has any say. But of course they had their own political parties and positions in government, and they governed themselves up to a large extent. But Chedi Gagan, who was the chief chap there, I think he was prime minister, was an Indian, and he was also a communist, and he was also subversive. Which was strange to say, being in the government, but there he was. So we had to watch him. The other one, which was a slight worry, was Grenada, where there was the chief minister there had ideas of independence or causing trouble. But these people didn't get much backing from the people inside the colonies, so they were all sort of one-off mavericks, most of them. And the other two we had to deal with later on, but Grenada was dealt with by the Navy. They sent some matlows ashore when there was a riot being generated, artificial riot being generated, and as soon as the matlows had gone ashore from one of the Navy's frigates, so it just quietened down and that was it. So that brings them really to the point that one of my duties was to keep in liaison touch with the Royal Navy, and that consisted of the America and West Indies Station, as they called it, based in Bermuda. There was a cruiser in which the Admiral, Vice Admiral, flew his flag. He was in Admiral and Commander-in-Chief, and there were about three or four frigates. He was also Deputy Supreme Supreme Allied Commander Atlantic, based in Norfolk, Virginia, which was obviously the top chap was an American. And their job was to go around showing the flag, basically, in North, South America, Caribbean. But they were also required at times, if needed, to carry troops around from one place to another. They also, during the hurricane season, which was from the middle of July to the middle of November, they had a hurricane ship, guard ship, which used to motor around the threatened territory, so to speak, with blankets, water, tents and whatnot aboard, so they could be rushed in at any time. So we kept in very close contact with the Royal Navy. In fact, they had the cipher. We had a cipher section with the signals, Royal signals. And the people who had a cipher was the Royal Navy, the Americans in Panama. And there was a commander, Americans had a commander-in-chief, Panama and Caribbean, based in Panama. And we used to have meetings with them, which will come up again later. They had a cipher, and the governors of colonies had ciphers. Because not every island, I mean, perhaps to go on to the territory now, there was a governor of Jamaica who we had a lot of dealings with. There was a governor of the Leeward Islands as a whole, and he was based in St. Lucia, and the other islands all had administrators worked under him. And then there was a governor for the Windward Islands, based in St. Lucia. Did I say St. Lucia for the first one? I did, didn't I? Grenada is the Leeward Islands, and St. Lucia is the Windward, that's right. And they had a governor in each of those, and all the other islands had administrators. And they weren't all Brits either, and one or two of them were local Caribbean people, what islands they came from. I mean, Montserrat, for instance, had a local as an administrator. And in fact, he was called a commissioner, not an administrator. There was a governor in Trinidad who looked after Trinidad and Tobago. And then, of course, there was a governor in British Guiana. There was a governor in British Honduras. And there was a governor in Bermuda and Bahamas. Although Bermuda and Bahamas didn't have an awful lot to do with, although they came within our reach, so to speak, we didn't visit them very frequently.
Did you have any liaison with the French who had islands?
Yes, we had Martinique. There was the préfet there who we used to have, liaison with. And Guadeloupe, of course, and then there was somewhere else, French. Can't remember it. Then the Dutch, of course, Curacao, and Aruba. So we had liaison with both these. Not so much the Dutch, but more with the French.
Did the French have any significant forces in the area?
No, not very much, only on land. I don't think we ever received a courtesy visit by any of their ships, as far as I can remember. They're mostly American or Brits. They had some troops on the island, because we got a guard of honour, I remember, when we visited there, Martinique, with the brigadier later on in the story. But other than that, I don't think they had very much. So that was our territory. Now, I was also that's internal security more than anything else, and intelligence. Now, there was a guy from military intelligence who used to pop in and out again with dark glasses. He literally did wear dark glasses. He's a most amusing chap. Felix something, I think he was. He wasn't much older than me. And as far as I can make out, he used to go around all the bars of the Caribbean and everywhere trying to pick up information. But he came in on the act sometimes. But he used to have regular visits from him. And of course, from the intelligence point of view, we had to keep abreast of all the political developments in all the colonies as to what was going on, especially with the political parties themselves, usually the head of the political parties, and the unions, because they had unions. People don't seem to realize this. They had unions. Mostly they were quiet and there wasn't any problem. Then there was training. So I had to take care. Well, there were some ranges there. So, and there were normal ranges, butt ranges. There was a field firing range. And there was a mortar range, I remember. The allocation of all these places came under my purview. There was courses, training courses. We used to run toots, study days, and anything on the training side I got involved with, pushing out information which came from higher authority. Because we were directly under the War Office. We were controlled by MO3, Military Operations 3 in the War Office, who bothered us little. In fact, it was one of the best commands I've ever been in, I think. I mean, we were 4,000 miles away from the UK. In those days, people just couldn't drop in by helicopter or anything, so you always knew if somebody was coming to visit you days before they got there. There was a radio link between our... Well, no, cable and wireless. All our stuff had to go through cable and wireless, apart from radio links we locally had locally. So anything, if it didn't go by normal mail, then they were sent sort of telegram-wise to War Office or whoever wanted to send them to. And they held, of course, the cipher as well. So there was a limited number of people who held the ciphers. And, of course, we had a cipher section in the Royal Signals who did all the... what's the word I want?
Coding.
Coding, that's right, thanks.
You're talking about internal security.
Yeah.
And now, given that you've got a wide area to survey, a very large number of territories, and within that number of territories a considerable diversity in populations and local circumstances, it must have been a rather complicated picture to keep up.
Well, you could only do it by visiting. You had to go there to go through their internal security scheme, which you do in conjunction with the local commissioner of police.
I was going to ask you about liaison with the police,
yes,
because they're obviously always your first line, aren't
they,
yes, against internal
That's
security
right.
threats.
So very often I visit these places and then I'd stay at Government House normally, and then I would visit the commissioner of police. And then anything, if we wanted to make any alterations or anything like that, they then had to go up to the governor for his approval, and that'd be it. And then, of course, there were local forces as well. There was Bermuda Regiment. The other places, British Honduras had a small local force. I thought I made a note. British Guiana had a volunteer force, and somewhere in the Leeward Islands, I think it must have been St. Lucia, they had a small, but they're all voluntary, and we had no responsibilities for them. They came under the local governors, so we weren't allowed to produce any money, do anything which cost us money as far as they were concerned, but they did require our guidance, our help and our advice and inspection. So that's another thing I had to do, was to carry out an annual inspection of all these volunteer forces.
What sort of standard were they generally?
They varied a bit. They were all very keen, very, very keen. I think the Bermuda Regiment was the best of them. I mean, you couldn't have sent them to war, but you see, their main task was to guard VPs, vulnerable points, in the case of riots. Or, I mean, they wouldn't be there to repel borders. I don't think they'd be able to repel a determined landing or anything of that sort.
Was there any possibility of an external threat?
Only British Honduras.
Yes, but that wouldn't have been amphibious, would it?
No, that wouldn't. That wasn't amphibious. No, sorry. Yes, that wasn't. No, I don't think there was any threat at all.
Mm.
But you see, that's another thing we had in Jamaica. All part of the internal security. We had our own internal security scheme there, which I had to write up and keep up to date with the Commissioner of Police there, so that we sent troops to guard vulnerable points like radio station, electricity works, the docks, anything which would you need to keep the country going in the event of uprising or riots. We never had to use it. But it had to be kept up to date and amended if necessary.
Were the Guatemalans being particularly menacing at the time, or were
they were? Yeah. You see, there was a Caribbean circus, I think they called themselves, of aircraft which could be called upon at any time by volunteers to do mercenary work. And of course the Guatemalans would find it very difficult to invade British Honduras overland because there was only one unmade-up road which came in, and that was a long way from Belize, which was then the capital on the coast. So we came to the conclusion that the only way they could do it was to take the airport.
Seize an airhead and fly in.
So we, one of the things we had to watch was the so-called Caribbean Circus, because there was any hint that their aircraft were being called in to Guatemala and their pilots being got and so forth, then that would have been red danger or whatever. But it never happened. They never...
You mentioned that Dr. Jagan in British Guiana was a communist. Did you think that he was operating on his own initiative, or he was operating under orders from Moscow?
No, he was entirely local. Mm. He had contacts with Moscow. He visited Moscow, but he wasn't under any orders.
Mm.
I think they would have helped. I think there's no doubt that had he been able to do anything, they would have helped, and I think he might have found himself getting in the same situation as Cuba, dependent on Moscow to support him. But fortunately it never got that far, as we will see much later.
Another thing about Dr. Jagan is that he was of Indian descent, and the population in British Guiana was divided between those of Indian descent, those who are local, and those who are of African descent.
That's right.
Did you perceive a threat of communal tension there?
There was internal tensions, yes. Mm. There were two parties there. There was the Indian side and there was the African side. After Jagan finally went, then the African ones took over. Mm. But I was astonished to find that Jagan came back again after independence. And I can't remember the names. They'll come back to me when I've had time to sit down and think about it, because they're right at the back here, but I've got to bring them forward.
Call them forward.
Yes. So we'll get round to that, because I had to go down there and we had a lot of trouble later on. Same with British Honduras, I had to go over there as well. There were one or two services in Jamaica which I should perhaps have mentioned before we got onto this, was that there was an ROC and unit and the Royal Army Pay Corps. There was a command paymaster there, obviously. Then there was, for security purposes, there were some RMPs. There were two British sergeants and about a dozen Jamaican lance corporals as made up the band, and they came directly under my control because I was responsible for the security of Upark Camp, and these guys manned the gates. There were only, as far as I can remember, there was one gate which was closed, which was known as the Duppy Gate. Now Duppy was a Jamaican word for ghost, spirit. And that was permanently closed. So whether somebody had seen a duppy there or some duppies had tried to get in without passes, I don't know. But that was permanently closed. And there was one other one, which was manned. And you couldn't get in without a pass. You had to have a pass to come into the camp. So it was well guarded. There's quite an amusing story about duppies, if you've got the moment. There was one of the local, because a lot of established English families or British families. One of them had all his servants walked out one day because they said they'd seen ghosts, or there was rumours of ghosts there, duppies. So they all walked out, and the family was left on their own in the house. So he had a wheeze. He got hold of some donkeys, and he put on the donkeys little white ghost-like figures, and then sent them down the drive and went off. And they saw this, and they thought that was the duppies leaving. So when they'd all gone, they all came back again. He said, the duppies have all gone now. And they said, oh, that's great. Yes, we saw them going off. I said, that's fine. So they all came back and lived happily ever after.
Were these beliefs connected with voodoo?
I didn't come across that very much.
No.
I think that's probably... There was one other, yes, there was one other brilliant little unit there, the Jamaica Band.
Oh.
They were Jamaicans, and they were... Their bandmaster was one Major Bobby Jones, I remember. He was getting near the end of his tenure there. He'd been with them for years. An ex-bandmaster from the British Army. And they were dressed in... I think you were mentioning them a little earlier, French North African
spy
uniforms, which they'd had.
God knows.
They wore these black trousers, I remember, and gold jackets and red waistcoats, and these little round white things on the top of their heads. They were a damn good band. They played very well, marched very well, and they all had these uniforms. Apparently they attended Queen Victoria's Golden Jubilee. And old Bobby had this band, so we were able to furnish mass bands, what with the Royal Welsh Fusiliers band and this band. And then sometimes, on occasions, the Navy came in and the Royal Marine Band performed with them as well. I wonder if I've finished. Oh, ceremony, of course, we'd better get back to what I was doing. There was also, of course, SD, staff duties, side. That was establishments, chiefly. I had to keep an eye on all the establishments of the various units and the headquarters itself, I suppose, because they all had authorised establishments printed. And if there were any changes, then I had to get the amendments done, or if somebody recommended, they said they wanted to change the establishment, then we had to look at it, see whether it was justified or whether we couldn't cut down on some people. So that was another thing I had to do. Then there was a ceremonial side where we had a fair amount of ceremonial there. There was the Queen's birthday parade, which had to be put on. There was the Armistice Day parade, which had to be put on. There were guards of honour for all visiting firemen. And as we will see, the Queen and Churchill came out later. And there were special events which I had to organise. And of course, when you have Queen's birthday parade and Armistice Day parades in a college, it's a big thing. You have to get everything out and make a big show of it.
Were they very well attended?
Oh, yes, yes. Yeah. No, there was no... I didn't detect any dissent at all there. I mean, there were two political parties, which I'll have to try and remember. And the heads were, some of them were a bit hot-headed at times. But there was no sort of move for independence.
Well, you haven't mentioned there being any sort of internal security threat inside Jamaica or something.
No, none at all, really. We didn't have any. There was the only thing, we had the bauxite mines there, which we had to be guarded. But then you see the other VP, big VPs around the place, was oil in Trinidad.
Yes.
And there was bauxite in British Guiana as well, which had to be brought up through the river, taken to Trinidad, in a place called Chaguaramas, I think it was called, where it was refined. Then it was shipped into big ships, Canadian ships, and taken up to Canada. But they were the main, they were really the main VPs, I mean, apart from the normal ones you get, which I've just recently...
Communications facilities and power stations, you mentioned, and docks.
Yes, yeah. Yes, all those sort of things.
What about political offices, like the governor's?
Well, there was a guard, permanent guard on that. That was Jamaica Battalion. In fact, very often when we had visiting people, the Jamaica Battalion provided the guard because it was Jamaica and ceremonial. What else did I have there? Oh, yes, I had to organise, as I did in Jamaica, in Burma when I was G there, weapons meetings, which we had once a command. Weapons meeting, and athletic meeting. I had to organise that as well. And as I said, I found myself as chairman of some football league there as well, which I wasn't expecting.
Did these weapons meetings involve the local forces as well as the British troops?
In Jamaica.
Yes.
There was one other organisation there which we had to keep an eye on. That was a cadet force there, which had to be inspected once a year and helped.
Was that well recruited?
Yes. Yes, it was. It was under somebody called Colonel Cordova, I remember. Cordova. I don't know why he was, where he became a colonel or not. I mean, some of these people who, with cadets and that sort of thing, have these high titles. Whether he gave himself the title because he happened to be in charge, or whether he was an ex-colonel, I never found out. But he was very good. Because there were a lot of Europeans or white people there who weren't from Britain at all. There were Lebanese, there were Chinese who had most of the grocery stores and that sort of thing. The Lebanese ran the big stores, departmental stores. Japanese as well. So there was quite a mixture. The Lebanese ran the only hotel there, I think. Not the only hotel. The only hotel on the north coast at that time. Of course, now they're all along the north coast. In those days, there wasn't an awful lot of tourism. The only tourists you got were the Brits who came up for the winter and stayed for a couple of months.
This is before the development of mass tourism.
Yes, and Americans. There were some Americans came down. Mm. Aeroplanes were beginning to move around. I mean, if you wanted to get to Jamaica by air, you had to go across in a propeller-driven job to New York, then down to Miami, then changing planes, then down to Miami, and from Miami down to Kingston, Jamaica. But the local airline, which I used a lot, was British West Indian Airways. And they flew Vikings, I think it was in those days. But they couldn't get into every island.
What about the Royal Air Force? Did they have a presence in
No, none
area?
At all. No,
at all.
No. We got visited once by an air marshal who came down with some jets. And I can't remember what jets they were.
Would they have been lightnings?
Might be lightnings.
Meteors?
No, I think lightnings. Mm. Yes, lightnings.
They were the fighter that was deployed in Korea, I think.
Yes, yes. That's right. Yeah. I'm just going back thinking the cruiser there, the flagship was a cruiser, Sheffield. But it's not the Sheffield that got blown up in.
The predecessor.
Predecessor, but it was a big cruiser like the Belfast.
So it would have been 8 inch guns then?
Yes, I assume so, yeah. It would be the same class as the Belfast, city class, or whatever they called it, yeah. I'm just sort of coming up with odd bits snippets now, aren't I? I've already mentioned we had a strong liaison with the Royal Navy. We had a strong liaison with the Americans, so there were a lot of meetings there to attend.
Well, those liaisons mainly face-to-face?
Yes.
Yes.
Yeah. The Americans, you see, had a commander-in-chief in Panama, but they had a naval base in Trinidad, which was aircraft, actually.
Presumably leased.
Yes, yes. And then they had bases in Bahamas and the Turk Islands for guided missile bases.
Mm. These were all British territories?
Yes. But then they were interested, as far as we were concerned, in what they called the Western approaches to the Panama Canal. That was what they were. They were interested, as far as we were concerned, in defence of the Panama Canal from the West.
Presumably also the approaches to Florida and southern United States have been covered from.
Well, it would be, but their main concern was to keep the Panama Canal open. And of course, so far as the Brits were concerned, we covered a lot of the approaches with our own territories. So there was a lot of meetings and talks with them, which came.